smoke, no bleeding, no scar, no pain. "It's gone," he said, stunned. "I feel completely normal. What the heck?" "You beat it, man," Percy laughed. "You found your own cure." Jason considered that. He guessed it must be true. Maybe putting aside his pain to help his friends had done the trick. Or maybe his decision to honor the gods at both camps had healed him, giving him a clear path to the future. Roman or Greek, the difference didn't matter. Like he told the ghosts at Ithaca, his family had just gotten bigger. Now he saw his place in it. He would keep his promise to the storm goddess. And because of that, Michael Varus's sword meant nothing. Die a Roman. No. If he had to die, he would die a son of Jupiter, a child of the gods, the blood of Olympus. But he wasn't about to let himself get sacrificed, at least not without a fight. "Come on." Jason clapped his friend on the back. "Let's go check on our ship." Chapter 29. Nico. Given a choice between death and the Buford Zippy Mart, Nico would have had a tough time deciding. At least he knew his way around the land of the dead. Plus, the food was fresher.
"I still don't get it," Coach Hedge muttered as they roamed the center aisle. "They named a whole town after Leo's table?"
"I think the town was here first, Coach," Nico said.
"Huh."
The coach picked up a box of powdered donuts.
"Maybe you're right. These look at least 100 years old. I miss those Portuguese farturas."
Nico couldn't think about Portugal without his arms hurting. Across his biceps, the werewolf claw marks were still swollen and red. The store clerk had asked Nico if he'd picked a fight with a bobcat. They bought a first aid kit, a pad of paper, so Coach Hedge could write more paper airplane messages to his wife, some junk food and soda, since the banquet table in Reyna's new magic tent only provided healthy food and fresh water, and some miscellaneous camping supplies for Coach Hedge's useless but impressively complicated monster traps. Nico had been hoping to find some fresh clothes. 2 days since they'd fled San Juan, he was tired of walking around in his tropical Isla del Encantorico shirt, especially since Coach Hedge had a matching one. Unfortunately, the Zippy Mart only carried T-shirts with Confederate flags and corny sayings like, "Keep calm and follow the redneck." Nico decided he'd stick with parrots and palm trees. They walked back to the campsite down a 2-lane road under the blazing sun. This part of South Carolina seemed to consist mostly of overgrown fields, punctuated by telephone poles and trees covered in kudzu vines. The town of Buford itself was a collection of portable metal sheds, 6 or 7, which was probably also the town's population. Nico wasn't exactly a sunshine person, but for once, he welcomed the warmth. It made him feel more substantial, anchored to the mortal world. With every shadow jump, coming back got harder and harder. Even in broad daylight, his hand passed through solid objects. His belt and sword kept falling around his ankles for no apparent reason. Once, when he wasn't looking where he was going, he walked straight through a tree. Nico remembered something Jason Grace had told him in the Palace of Notus. "Maybe it's time you come out of the shadows." If only I could, he thought. For the first time in his life, he had begun to fear the dark, because he might melt into it permanently. Nico and Hedge had no trouble finding their way back to camp. The Athena Parthenos was the tallest landmark for miles around. In its new camouflage netting, it glittered silver like an extremely flashy 40-foot-tall ghost. Apparently, the Athena Parthenos had wanted them to visit a place with educational value, because she'd landed right next to a historical marker that read, "Massacre of Buford, on a gravel turnout at the intersection of nowhere and nothing. Reyna's tent sat in a grove of trees about 30 yards back from the road. Nearby lay a rectangular cairn, hundreds of stones piled in the shape of an oversized grave, with a granite obelisk for a headstone. Scattered around it were faded wreaths and crushed bouquets of plastic flowers, which made the place seem even sadder. Aram and Argentum were playing keep-away in the woods with one of the coach's handballs. Ever since getting repaired by the Amazons, the metal dogs had been frisky and full of energy, unlike their owner. Reyna sat cross-legged at the entrance of the tent, staring at the memorial obelisk. She hadn't said much since they'd fled San Juan 2 days ago. They'd also encountered no monsters, which made Nico uneasy. They'd had no further word from the hunters or the Amazons. They didn't know what had happened to Hilla or Thalia or the giant Orion. Nico didn't like the hunters of Artemis. Tragedy followed them as surely as their dogs and birds of prey. His sister Bianca had died after joining the hunters. Then, Thalia Grace became their leader and started recruiting even more young women to their cause, which grated on Nico, as if Bianca's death could be forgotten, as if she could be replaced. When Nico woke up at the Barrachina and found the hunter's note about kidnapping Reyna, he'd torn apart the courtyard in rage. He didn't want the hunters stealing another important person from him. Fortunately, he'd gotten Reyna back, but he didn't like how brooding she had become. Every time he tried to ask her about the incident on the Calle San Jose, those ghosts on the balcony, all staring at her, whispering accusations, Reyna shut him down. Nico knew something about ghosts. Letting them get inside your head was dangerous. He wanted to help Reyna, but since his own strategy was to deal with his problems alone, spurning anyone who tried to get close, he couldn't exactly criticize Reyna for doing the same thing. She glanced up as they approached.
I figured it out.
What historical site this is? Hedge asked. Good, 'cause it's been driving me crazy.
The Battle of Waxhaws, she said.
Ah, right, Hedge nodded sagely. That was a vicious little smackdown.
Nico tried to sense any restless spirits in the area, but he felt nothing. Unusual for a battleground.
Are you sure?
In 1780, Reyna said, the American Revolution. Most of the colonial leaders were Greek demigods. The British generals were Roman demigods.
Because England was like Rome back then, Nico guessed. A rising empire.
Reyna picked up a crushed bouquet.
I think I know why we landed here. It's my fault.
Ah, come on, Hedge scoffed. The Buford Zippy Mart isn't anybody's fault. Those things just happen.
Reyna picked at the faded plastic flowers.
During the Revolution, 400 Americans got overtaken here by British cavalry. The colonial troops tried to surrender, but the British were out for blood. They massacred the Americans even after they threw down their weapons. Only a few survived.
Nico supposed he should have been shocked, but after traveling through the underworld, hearing so many stories of evil and death, a wartime massacre hardly seemed newsworthy.
Reyna, how is that your fault?
The British commander was Bannister Tarleton.
Hedge snorted.
I've heard of him. Crazy dude. They called him Benny the Butcher.
Yes, Reyna took a shaky breath. He was a son of Bellona.
Oh,
Nico stared at the oversized grave. It still bothered him that he couldn't sense any spirits. Hundreds of soldiers massacred at this spot. That should have sent out some kind of death vibe. He sat next to Reyna and decided to take a risk.
So you think we were drawn here because you have some sort of connection to the ghosts? Like what happened in San Juan?
For a 10 count, she said nothing, turning the plastic bouquet in her hand.
I don't want to talk about San Juan.
You should.
Nico felt like a stranger in his own body.
Why was he encouraging Reyna to share? It wasn't his style or his business. Nevertheless, he kept talking.
The main thing about ghosts, most of them have lost their voices. In Asphodel, millions of them wander around aimlessly, trying to remember who they were. You know why they end up like that? Because in life, they never took a stand one way or another. They never spoke out, so they were never heard. Your voice is your identity. If you don't use it, he said with a shrug, you're halfway to Asphodel already.
Reyna scowled. Is that your idea of a pep talk? Coach Hedge cleared his throat.
This is getting too psychological for me. I'm going to write some letters.
He took his notepad and headed into the woods. The last day or so, he'd been writing a lot, apparently not just to Melly. The coach wouldn't share details, but he hinted that he was calling in some favors to help with the quest. For all Nico knew, he was writing to Jackie Chan. Nico opened his shopping bag. He pulled out a box of Little Debbie oatmeal cream pies and offered one to Reyna. She wrinkled her nose.
Those look like they went stale in dinosaur times.
Maybe, but I've got a big appetite these days. Any kind of food tastes good. Except maybe pomegranate seeds. I'm done with those.
Reyna picked out a cream pie and took a bite.
The ghosts in San Juan. They were my ancestors.
Nico waited. The breeze ruffled the camouflage netting over the Athena Parthenos.
The Ramirez-Arellano family goes back a long way, Reyna continued. I don't know the whole story. My ancestors lived in Spain when it was a Roman province. My great-great-something-something-grandfather was a conquistador. He came over to Puerto Rico with Ponce de León.
One of the ghosts on the balcony was wearing conquistador armor, Nico recalled.
That's him.
So, is your whole family descendant from Bologna? I thought you and Hilla were her daughters, not legacies.
Too late. Nico realized he shouldn't have brought up Hilla. A look of despair passed over Reyna's face, though she managed to hide it quickly.
We are her daughters, Reyna said. We're the first actual children of Bologna in the Ramirez-Arellano family, and Bologna has always favored our clan. Millennia ago, she decreed that we would play pivotal roles in many battles.
Like you're doing now, Nico said.
Reyna brushed crumbs from her chin.
Perhaps. Some of my ancestors have been heroes. Some have been villains. You saw the ghost with the gunshot wounds in the chest?
Nico nodded.
A pirate?
The most famous in Puerto Rican history. He was known as the pirate Cofresí, but his family name was Ramirez de Arellano. Our house, the family villa, was built with money from treasure that he buried.
For a moment, Nico felt like a little kid again. He was tempted to blurt out,
"That's so cool!"
Even before he got into mythomagic, he'd been obsessed with pirates. Probably that was one reason he'd been so smitten with Percy, a son of the sea god.
"And the other ghosts?" he asked.
Reyna took another bite of cream pie.
"The guy in the U.S. Navy uniform. He's my great-great-uncle from World War II, the first Latino submarine commander. You get the idea. A lot of warriors. Bologna was our patron goddess for generations."
"But she never had demigod children in your family. Until you."
"The goddess. She fell in love with my father, Julian. He was a soldier in Iraq. He was..."
Reyna's voice broke. She tossed aside the plastic bouquet of flowers.
"I can't do this. I can't talk about him."
A cloud passed overhead, blanketing the woods in shadows. Nico didn't want to push Reyna. What right did he have? He set down his oatmeal cream pie.
and noticed that his fingertips were turning to smoke. The sunlight returned. His hands became solid again, but Nico's nerves jangled. He felt as if he'd been pulled back from the edge of a high balcony.
"Your voice is your identity," he'd told Reyna. "If you don't use it, you're halfway to Asphodel already."
He hated when his own advice applied to himself.
"My dad gave me a present once," Nico said. "It was a zombie."
Reyna stared at him.
"What?"
"His name is Jules Albert. He's French."
"A French zombie?"
"Hades isn't the greatest, Dad, but occasionally he has these want-to-know-my-son moments. I guess he thought the zombie was a peace offering. He said Jules Albert could be my chauffeur."
The corner of Reyna's mouth twitched.
"A French zombie chauffeur."
Nico realized how ridiculous it sounded. He'd never told anyone about Jules Albert, not even Hazel. But he kept talking.
"Hades had this idea that I should, you know, try to act like a modern teenager. Make friends. Get to know the 21st century. He vaguely understood that mortal parents drive their kids around a lot. He couldn't do that. So his solution was a zombie."
"To take you to the mall," Reyna said. "Or the drive-thru at In-N-Out Burger."
"I suppose."
Nico's nerves began to settle.
"Because nothing helps you make friends faster than a rotting corpse with a French accent."
Reyna laughed.
"I'm sorry. I shouldn't make fun."
"It's okay. Point is, I don't like talking about my dad either. But sometimes," he said, looking her in the eyes, "you have to."
Reyna's expression turned serious.
"I never knew my father in his better days. Hilla said he used to be gentler when she was very small, before I was born. He was a good soldier, fearless, disciplined, cool under fire. He was handsome. He could be very charming. Bellona blessed him, as she had with so many of my ancestors, but that wasn't enough for my dad. He wanted her for his wife."
Over in the woods, Coach Hedge muttered to himself as he wrote. Three paper airplanes were already spiraling upward in the breeze, heading to God's new where.
"My father dedicated himself completely to Bellona," Reyna continued. "It's one thing to respect the power of war. It's another thing to fall in love with it. I don't know how he did it, but he managed to win Bellona's heart. My sister was born just before he went to Iraq for his last tour of duty. He was honorably discharged, came home a hero. If he'd been able to adjust to civilian life, everything might have been all right."
"But he couldn't," Nico guessed.
Reyna shook her head.
"Shortly after he got back, he had one last encounter with the goddess. That's the, reason I was born. Bellona gave him a glimpse of the future. She explained why our family was so important to her. She said the legacy of Rome would never fail as long as one of our bloodline remained, fighting to defend our homeland. Those words, I think she meant them to be reassuring, but my father became fixated on them."
"War can be hard to get over," Nico said, remembering Pietro, one of his neighbors from his childhood in Italy.
Pietro had come back from Mussolini's African campaign in one piece, but after shelling Ethiopian civilians with mustard gas, his mind was never the same. Despite the heat, Reyna drew her cloak around her.
"Part of the problem was post-traumatic stress. He couldn't stop thinking about the war, and then there was the constant pain. A roadside bomb left shrapnel in his shoulder and chest. But it was more than that. Over the years, as I was growing up, he changed."
Nico didn't respond. He'd never had anyone talk to him this openly before, except maybe for Hazel. He felt like he was watching a flock of birds settle on a field. One loud sound might startle them away.
He became paranoid, Reyna said. He thought Bologna's words were a warning that our bloodline would be exterminated and the legacy of Rome would fail. He saw enemies everywhere. He collected weapons. He turned our house into a fortress. At night, he would lock Hilla and me in our rooms. If we sneaked out, he would yell at us and throw furniture. And, well, he terrified us. At times, he even thought we were the enemies. He became convinced we were spying on him, trying to undermine him. Then the ghosts started appearing. I guess they'd always been there, but they picked up on my father's agitation and began to manifest. They whispered to him, feeding his suspicions. Finally, one day, I can't tell you for sure when, I realized he had ceased to be my father. He had become one of the ghosts.
A cold tide rose in Nico's chest.
A mania, he speculated. I've seen it before. A human withers away until he's not human anymore. Only his worst qualities remain. His insanity.
It was clear from Reyna's expression that his explanation wasn't helping.
Whatever he was, Reyna said, he became impossible to live with. Hilla and I escaped the house as often as we could, but eventually we'd come back and face his rage. We didn't know what else to do. He was our only family. The last time we returned, he was so angry he was literally glowing. He couldn't physically touch things anymore, but he could move them. Like a poltergeist, I guess. He tore up the floor tiles. He ripped open the sofa. Finally, he tossed a chair, and it hit Hilla. She collapsed. She was only knocked unconscious, but I thought she was dead. She'd spent so many years protecting me. I just lost it. I grabbed the nearest weapon I could find, a family heirloom, the pirate Confrasi's saber. I didn't know it was imperial gold. I ran at my father's spirit and...
You vaporized him, Nico guessed.
Reyna's eyes brimmed with tears.
I killed my own father.
No, Reyna, no. That wasn't him. That was a ghost. Even worse, a mania. You were protecting your sister.
She twisted the silver ring on her finger.
You don't understand. Patricide is the worst crime a Roman can commit. It's unforgivable.
You didn't kill your father. The man was already dead, Nico insisted. You dispelled a ghost.
It doesn't matter,
Reyna sobbed.
If word of this got out at Camp Jupiter...
You'd be executed, said a new voice.
At the edge of the woods stood a Roman legionnaire in full armor, holding a pilum. A mop of brown hair hung in his eyes. His nose had obviously been broken at least once, which made his smile look even more sinister.
Thank you for your confession, former praetor. You've made my job much easier.
Chapter 30. Nico. Coach Hedge chose that moment to burst into the clearing, waving a paper airplane and yelling,
Good news, everyone!
He froze when he saw the Roman.
Oh, never mind.
He quickly crumpled the airplane and ate it. Reyna and Nico got to their feet. Aram and Argentum scampered to Reyna's side and growled at the intruder. How this guy had gotten so close with none of them noticing, Nico didn't understand.
Bryce Lawrence, Reyna said. Octavian's newest attack dog.
The Roman inclined his head. His eyes were green, but not sea green like Percy's. More like pond scum green.
The auger has many attack dogs, Bryce said. I'm just the lucky one who found you. your Greekish friend here. He pointed his chin at Nico. He was easy to track. He stinks of the underworld.
Nico unsheathed his sword.
You know the underworld? Would you like me to arrange a visit?
Bryce laughed. His front teeth were two different shades of yellow.
Do you think you can frighten me? I'm a descendant of Orcus, the god of broken vows and eternal punishment. I've heard the screams in the fields of punishment firsthand. They're music to my ears. Soon, I'll be adding one more damned soul to the chorus.
He grinned at Reyna.
Patricide, eh? Octavian will love this news. You are under arrest for multiple violations of Roman law.
You being here is against Roman law, Reyna said. Romans don't quest alone. A mission has to be led by someone of centurion rank or higher. You're in probatio, and even giving you that rank was a mistake. You have no right to arrest me.
Bryce shrugged.
In times of war, some rules have to be flexible. But don't worry. Once I bring you in for trial, I'll be rewarded with full membership in the Legion. I imagine I'll be promoted to centurion, too. Doubtless there will be vacancies after the coming battle. Some officers won't survive, especially if their loyalties aren't in the right place.
Coach Hedge hefted his bat.
I don't know the proper Roman etiquette, but can I bash this kid now?
A fawn, Bryce said. Interesting. I heard the Greeks actually trusted their goat men.
Hedge bleated.
I'm a satyr, and you can trust I'm going to put this bat upside your head, you little punk.
The coach advanced, but as soon as his foot touched the cairn, the stones rumbled like they were coming to a boil. Out of the gravesite, skeletal warriors erupted. Spartoi in the tattered remains of British redcoat uniforms. Hedge scrambled away, but the first two skeletons grabbed his arms and lifted him off the ground. The coach dropped his bat and kicked his hooves.
Let me go, you stupid boneheads! He bellowed.
Nico watched, paralyzed, as the grave spewed forth more dead British soldiers. 5, 10, 20, multiplying so quickly that Reyna and her metal dogs were surrounded before Nico even thought to raise his sword. How could he not have sensed so many dead, so close at hand?
I forgot to mention, Bryce said. I'm actually not alone on this quest. As you can see, I have backup. These redcoats promised quarter to the colonials. Then they butchered them. Personally, I like a good massacre, but because they broke their oaths, their spirits were damned, and they are perpetually under the power of Orcus, which means they are also under my control.
He pointed to Reyna.
Seize the girl!
The Spartoi surged forward. Aurum and Argentum took down the first few, but they were quickly wrestled to the ground, skeletal hands clamped over their muzzles. The redcoats grabbed Reyna's arms. For undead creatures, they were surprisingly quick. Finally, Nico came to his senses. He slashed at the Spartoi, but his sword passed harmlessly through them. He exerted his will, ordering the skeletons to dissolve. They acted as if he didn't exist.
What's wrong, son of Hades?
Bryce's voice was filled with fake sympathy.
Losing your grip?
Nico tried to push his way through the skeletons. There were too many. Bryce, Reyna, and Coach Hedge might as well have been behind a metal wall.
Nico, get out of here, Reyna said. Get to the statue and leave.
Yes, off you go, Bryce agreed. Of course, you realize that your next shadow jump will be your last. You know you don't have the strength to survive another, but by all means, take the Athena Parthenos.
Nico glanced down. He still held his Stygian sword, but his hands were dark and transparent, like smoky glass. Even in the direct sunlight, he was dissolving.
Stop this, he said. Oh, I'm not doing a thing, Bryce said,
But I am curious to see what will happen. If you take the statue, you'll disappear with it forever, right into oblivion. If you don't take it, well, I have orders to bring Reyna in alive to stand trial for treason. I have no orders to bring you in alive, or the fawn.
Cedar! The coach yelled.
He kicked the skeleton in its bony crotch, which seemed to hurt Hedge more than the redcoat.
Ow! Stupid British dead guys!
Bryce lowered his javelin and poked the coach in the belly.
I wonder what this one's pain tolerance would be. I've experimented on all kinds of animals. I even killed my own centurion once. I've never tried a fawn. Excuse me. A satyr. You reincarnate, don't you? How much pain can you take before you turn into a patch of daisies?
Nico's anger turned as cold and dark as his blade. He'd been morphed into a few plants himself, and he didn't appreciate it. He hated people like Bryce Lawrence, who inflicted pain just for fun.
Leave him alone, Nico warned.
Bryce raised an eyebrow.
Or what? By all means, try something underworldly, Nico. I'd love to see it. I have a feeling anything major will make you fade out permanently. Go ahead.
Reyna struggled.
Bryce, forget about them. If you want me as your prisoner, fine. I'll go willingly and face Octavian's stupid trial.
A fine offer.
Bryce turned his javelin, letting the tip hover a few inches from Reyna's eyes.
You really don't know what Octavian has planned, do you? He's been busy pulling in favors, spending the Legion's money.
Reyna clenched her fists.
Octavian has no right.
He has the right of power, Bryce said. You forfeited your authority when you ran off to the ancient lands. On August 1st, your Greek friends at Camp Half-Blood will find out what a powerful enemy Octavian is. I've seen the designs for his machines. Even I'm impressed.
Nico's bones felt like they were changing into helium, the way they'd felt when the god Favonius turned him into a breeze. Then he locked eyes with Reyna. Her strength surged through him, a wave of courage and resilience that made him feel substantial again, anchored to the mortal world. Even surrounded by the dead and facing execution, Reyna Ramirez Arellano had a huge reservoir of bravery to share.
Nico, she said, do what you need to do. I've got your back.
Bryce chuckled, clearly enjoying himself.
Oh, Reyna, you've got his back? It's going to be so fun dragging you before a tribunal, forcing you to confess that you killed your father. I hope they'll execute you in the ancient way, sewn into a sack with a rabid dog, then thrown into a river. I've always wanted to see that. I can't wait until your little secret comes out.
Until your little secret comes out.
Bryce flicked the point of his pillum across Reyna's face, leaving a line of blood, and Nico's rage exploded. Chapter 31. Nico. Later, they told him what happened. All he remembered was the screaming. According to Reyna, the air around him dropped to freezing. The ground blackened. In one horrible cry, he unleashed a flood of pain and anger on everyone in the clearing. Reyna and the coach experienced his journey through Tartarus, his capture by the giants, his days wasting away inside that bronze jar. They felt Nico's anguish from his days on the Argo II, and his encounter with Cupid in the ruins of Salona. They heard his unspoken challenge to Bryce Lawrence, loud and clear.
You want secrets? Here.
The spar toy disintegrated into ashes. The rocks of the cairn turned white with frost. Bryce Lawrence stumbled, clutching his head, both nostrils bleeding. Nico marched toward him. He grabbed Bryce's probatio tablet and ripped it off his neck.
You aren't worthy of this, Nico growled. The earth split under Bryce's feet. He sank up to his waist.
Stop!
Bryce clawed at the dirt and the plastic bouquets, but his body kept sinking.
You took an oath to the Legion.
Nico's breath steamed in the cold.
You broke its rules. You inflicted pain. You killed your own centurion.
I didn't!
You should have died for your crimes, Nico continued. That was the punishment. Instead, you got exile. You should have stayed away. Your father Orcus may not approve of broken oaths, but my father Hades really doesn't approve of those who escape punishment.
Please!
The word didn't make sense to Nico. The underworld had no mercy. It only had justice.
You're already dead, Nico said. You're a ghost with no tongue, no memory. You won't be sharing any secrets.
No!
Bryce's body turned dark and smoky. He slipped into the earth, up to his chest.
No! I am Bryce Lawrence! I'm alive!
Who are you?
Nico asked. The next sound from Bryce's mouth was a chattering whisper. His face became indistinct. He could have been anyone, just another nameless spirit among millions.
Begone,
Nico said. The spirit dissipated. The earth closed. Nico looked back and saw that his friends were safe. Reyna and the coach stared at him in horror. Reyna's face was bleeding. Aram and Argentum turned in circles as if their mechanical brains had short-circuited. Nico collapsed. His dreams made no sense, which was almost a relief. A flock of ravens circled in a dark sky. Then the ravens turned into horses galloping through the surf. He saw his sister, Bianca, sitting in the dining pavilion at Camp Half-Blood with the Hunters of Artemis. She smiled and laughed with her new group of friends. Then Bianca changed into Hazel, who kissed Nico on the cheek and said, "I want you to be an exception." He saw the harpy Ella with her shaggy red hair and red feathers, her eyes like dark coffee. She perched on the couch of the big house's living room. Propped next to her was the magical stuffed leopard head, Seymour. Ella rocked back and forth, feeding the leopard Cheetos.
"Cheese is not good for harpies," she muttered.
Then she scrunched up her face and chanted one of her memorized lines of prophecy.
"The fall of the sun, the final verse."
She fed Seymour more Cheetos.
"Cheese is good for leopard heads."
Seymour roared in agreement. Ella changed into a dark-haired, extremely pregnant cloud nymph, writhing in pain in a camp bunk bed. Clarice LaRue sat next to her, wiping the nymph's head with a cool cloth.
"Melly, you'll be fine,"
Clarice said, though she sounded worried.
"No, nothing is fine," Melly wailed. "Gia is rising."
The scene shifted. Nico stood with Hades in the Berkeley Hills on the day Hades first led him to Camp Jupiter.
"Go to them," said the god. "Introduce yourself as a child of Pluto. It is important you make this connection."
"Why?"
Nico asked. Hades dissolved. Nico found himself back in Tartarus, standing before Aklis, the goddess of misery. Blood streaked her cheeks. Tears streamed from her eyes, dripped on the shield of Hercules in her lap.
"Child of Hades, what more could I do to you? You are perfect. So much sorrow and pain."
Nico gasped. His eyes flew open. He was flat on his back, staring at the sunlight in the tree branches.
"Thank the gods."
Reyna leaned over him, her hand cool on his forehead. The bleeding cut on her face was completely gone. Next to her, Coach Hedge scowled. Sadly, Nico had a great view right up the coach's nostrils.
"Good,"
said the coach.
Just a few more applications.
He held up a large square bandage coated with sticky brown gunk and plastered it over Nico's nose.
What is... ugh.
The gunk smelled like potting soil, cedar chips, grape juice, and just a hint of fertilizer. Nico didn't have the strength to remove it. His senses started to work again. He realized he was lying on a sleeping bag outside the tent. He was wearing nothing but his boxer shorts and 1,000 gross brown plastered bandages all over his body. His arms, legs, and chest were itchy from the drying mud.
Are you trying to plant me?
He murmured.
It's sports medicine with a little nature magic, said the coach. Kind of a hobby of mine.
Nico tried to focus on Reyna's face.
You approve this?
She looked like she was about to pass out from exhaustion, but she managed a smile.
Coach Hedge brought you back from the brink. The unicorn draft, ambrosia, nectar, we couldn't use any of it. You were fading so badly.
Fading? Don't worry about that now, kid.
Hedge put a drinking straw next to Nico's mouth.
Have some Gatorade. I don't want... You'll have some Gatorade,
the coach insisted. Nico had some Gatorade. He was surprised at how thirsty he was.
What happened to me?
He asked.
To Bryce. To those skeletons.
Reyna and the coach exchanged an uneasy look.
There's good news and bad news, Reyna said. But first, eat something. You'll need your strength back before you hear the bad news.
Chapter 32. Nico.
3 days?
Nico wasn't sure he'd heard her right the first dozen times.
We couldn't move you, Reyna said. I mean... literally, you couldn't be moved. You had almost no substance. If it wasn't for Coach Hedge...
No biggie, the coach assured him. One time, in the middle of a playoff game, I had to splint a quarterback's leg with nothing but tree branches and strapping tape.
Despite his nonchalance, the satyr had bags under his eyes. His cheeks were sunken. He looked almost as bad as Nico felt. Nico couldn't believe he'd been unconscious for so long. He recounted his weird dreams, the mutterings of Ella the Harpy, the glimpse of Melly the Cloud Nymph, which worried the coach. But Nico felt as if those visions had lasted only seconds. According to Reyna, it was the afternoon of July 30th. He'd been in a shadow coma for days.
The Romans will attack Camp Half-Blood the day after tomorrow.
Nico sipped more Gatorade, which was nice and cold, but without flavor. His taste buds seemed to have phased into the shadow world permanently.
We have to hurry. I have to get ready.
No.
Reyna pressed her hand against his forearm, making the bandages crinkle.
Any more shadow travel would kill you.
He gritted his teeth.
If it kills me, it kills me. We have to get the statue to Camp Half-Blood. Hey, kid, said the coach. I appreciate your dedication, but if you zap us all into eternal darkness along with the Athena Parthenos, it's not going to help anybody. Bryce Lawrence was right about that.
At the mention of Bryce, Reyna's metallic dogs pricked up their ears and snarled. Reyna stared at the cairn of rocks, her eyes full of torment, as if more unwelcome spirits might emerge from the grave. Nico took a breath, getting a noseful of Hedge's fragrant home remedy.
Reyna, I didn't think. What I did to Bryce.
You destroyed him, Reyna said. You turned him into a ghost. And, yes, it reminded me of what happened to my father.
I didn't mean to scare you, Nico said bitterly. I didn't mean to poison another friendship. I'm sorry.
Reyna studied his face.
Nico, I have to admit, the first day you were unconscious, I didn't know what to think or feel. What you did was hard to watch, hard to process.
Coach Hedge chewed on a stick. I gotta agree with the girl on this one, kid. Smashing somebody's head in with a baseball bat, that's one thing. But ghostifying that creep? That was some dark stuff.
Nico expected to feel angry, to shout at them for trying to judge him. That's what he normally did. But his anger wouldn't materialize. He still felt plenty of rage toward Bryce Lawrence and Gia and the Giants. He wanted to find the Augur Octavian and strangle him with his chain belt. But he wasn't mad at Reyna or the coach.
"Why did you bring me back?" he asked. "You knew I couldn't help you anymore. You should have found another way to keep going with the statue. But you wasted 3 days watching over me. Why?"
Coach Hedge snorted.
"You're part of the team, you idiot. We're not going to leave you behind."
"It's more than that." Reyna rested her hand on Nico's. "While you were asleep, I did a lot of thinking. What I told you about my father, I'd never shared that with anyone. I guess I knew you were the right person to confide in. You lifted some of my burden. I trust you, Nico."
Nico stared at her, mystified.
"How can you trust me? You both felt my anger, saw my worst feelings."
"Hey, kid," said Coach Hedge, his tone softer. "We all get angry. Even a sweetheart like me."
Reyna smirked. She squeezed Nico's hand.
"Coach is right, Nico. You're not the only one who lets out the darkness once in a while. I told you what happened with my dad, and you supported me. You shared your painful experiences. How can we not support you? We're friends."
Nico wasn't sure what to say. They'd seen his deepest secrets. They knew who he was, what he was. But they didn't seem to care. No, they cared more. They weren't judging him. They were concerned. None of it made sense to him.
"But Bryce, I..."
Nico couldn't continue.
"You did what had to be done. I see that now," Reyna said. "Just promise me, no more turning people into ghosts if we can avoid it."
"Yeah," Coach said, "unless you let me wail on them first. Besides, it's not all bad news."
Reyna nodded.
"We've seen no sign of other Romans, so it appears Bryce didn't notify anyone else where he was. Also, no sign of Orion. Hopefully that means he was taken down by the hunters."
"And Hilla?"
Nico asked.
"Thalia?"
The lines tightened around Reyna's mouth.
"No word. But I have to believe they're still alive."
"You didn't tell him the best news,"
the coach prompted. Reyna frowned.
"Maybe because it's so hard to believe. Coach Hedge thinks he's found another way to transport the statue. It's all he's talked about for the past 3 days. But so far, we've seen no sign of..."
"Hey, it'll happen!"
Coach grinned at Nico.
"You remember that paper airplane I got right before Creepmeister Lawrence showed up? It was a message from one of Melly's contacts in the Palace of Aeolus. This harpy, Nuggets, she and Melly go way back. Anyway, she knows a guy who knows a guy who knows a horse who knows a goat who knows another horse..."
"Coach," Reyna chided, "you'll make him sorry he came out of his coma."
"Fine," the satyr huffed. "Long story short, I pulled in a lot of favors. I got word to the right wind-type spirits that we needed help. The letter I ate? Confirmation that the cavalry is coming. They said it would take a while to organize, but he should be here soon. Any minute, in fact."
"Who's he?" Nico asked. "What cavalry?"
Reyna stood abruptly. She stared toward the north, her face slack with awe.
"That cavalry,"
Nico followed her gaze. A flock of birds was approaching. Large birds. They got closer, and Nico realized they were horses with wings. At least a half dozen in V formation, without riders. Flying on point was a massive stallion with a golden coat and multicolored plumage like an eagle's, his wingspan twice as wide as the other horses.
"Pegasi," Nico said. "You summoned enough to carry the statue."
Coach laughed with delight.
"Not just any Pegasi, kid. You're in for a real treat."
"The stallion in front." Reyna shook her head in disbelief. "That's the Pegasus, the immortal lord of horses."
Chapter 33. Leo. Typical. Just as Leo finished his modifications, a big storm goddess came along and smacked the grommets right out of his ship. After their encounter with Kimopo What's-Her-Name, the Argo II limped through the Aegean, too damaged to fly, too slow to outrun monsters. They fought hungry sea serpents about every hour. They attracted schools of curious fish. At one point, they got stuck on a rock, and Percy and Jason had to get out and push. The wheezing sound of the engine made Leo want to cry. Over the course of 3 long days, he finally got the ship more or less back to working order, just as they made port at the island of Mykonos, which probably meant it was time for them to get bashed to pieces again. Percy and Annabeth went ashore to scout, while Leo stayed on the quarterdeck, fine-tuning the control console. He was so engrossed in the wiring, he didn't notice the landing party was back until Percy said,
"Hey man, gelato."
Instantly, Leo's day got better. The whole crew sat on deck, without a storm or a monster attack to worry about for the first time in days, and ate ice cream. Well, except for Frank, who was lactose intolerant. He got an apple. The day was hot and windy. The sea glittered with chop, but Leo had fixed the stabilizers well enough that Hazel didn't look too seasick. Curving off to their starboard side was the town of Mykonos, a collection of white stucco buildings with blue roofs, blue windows, and blue doors.
"We saw these pelicans walking around town," Percy reported. "Like, just going through the shops, stopping at the bars."
Hazel frowned.
"Monsters in disguise?"
"No," Annabeth said, laughing. "Just regular old pelicans. They're the town mascots or something. And there's a Little Italy section of town. That's why the gelato is so good."
"Europe is messed up," Leo shook his head.
"First we go to Rome for Spanish steps, then we go to Greece for Italian ice cream."
But he couldn't argue with the gelato. He ate his double chocolate delight and tried to imagine that he and his friends were just chilling on a vacation. Which made him wish Calypso was with him. Which made him wish the war was over and everybody was alive. Which made him sad. It was July 30th. Less than 48 hours until G-Day, when Gia, the princess of Potty Sludge, would awaken in all her dirt-faced glory. The strange thing was, the closer they got to August 1st, the more upbeat his friends acted. Or maybe upbeat wasn't the right word. They seemed to be pulling together for the final lap, aware that the next 2 days would make or break them. There was no point moping around when you faced imminent death. The end of the world made gelato taste a lot better. Of course, the rest of the crew hadn't been down in the stables with Leo, talking with the victory goddess Nike over the past 3 days. Piper set down her ice cream cup. "So the island of Delos is right across the harbor, Artemis and Apollo's home turf. Who's going?"
"Me,"
Leo said immediately. Everybody stared at him.
"What?"
Leo demanded.
"I'm diplomatic and stuff. Frank and Hazel volunteered to back me up."
"We did?"
Frank lowered his half-eaten apple.
"I mean,
Sure we did.
Hazel's gold eyes flashed in the sunlight.
Leo, did you have a dream about this or something?
Yes,
Leo blurted.
Well, no. Not exactly, but you gotta trust me on this, guys. I need to talk to Apollo and Artemis. I've got an idea I need to bounce off them.
Annabeth frowned. She looked like she might object, but Jason spoke up.
If Leo has an idea, he said, we need to trust him.
Leo felt guilty about that, especially considering what his idea was, but he mustered a smile.
Thanks, man.
Percy shrugged.
Okay, but a word of advice. When you see Apollo, don't mention Haiku.
Hazel knit her eyebrows.
Why not? Isn't he the god of poetry?
Just trust me.
Got it.
Leo rose to his feet.
And guys, if they have a souvenir shop on Delos, I'm totally bringing you back some Apollo and Artemis bobbleheads.
Apollo didn't seem to be in the mood for haiku. He wasn't selling bobbleheads either. Frank had turned into a giant eagle to fly to Delos, but Leo hitched a ride with Hazel on Orion's back. No offense to Frank, but after the fiasco at Fort Sumter, Leo had become a conscientious objector to riding giant eagles. He had a 100% failure rate. They found the island deserted, maybe because the seas were too choppy for the tourist boats. The windswept hills were barren except for rocks, grass, and wildflowers, and, of course, a bunch of crumbling temples. The rubble was probably very impressive, but ever since Olympia, Leo had been on ancient ruins overload. He was so done with white marble columns. He wanted to get back to the U.S., where the oldest buildings were the public schools and ye old McDonald's. They walked down an avenue lined with white stone lions, the faces weathered almost featureless.
It's eerie, Hazel said.
You sense any ghosts?
Frank asked.
She shook her head. The lack of ghosts is eerie. Back in ancient times, Delos was sacred ground. No mortal was allowed to be born here or die here. There are literally no mortal spirits on this whole island.
Cool with me, Leo said.
Does that mean nobody's allowed to kill us here?
I didn't say that.
Hazel stopped at the summit of a low hill.
Look, down there.
Below them, the hillside had been carved into an amphitheater. Scrubby plants sprouted between the rows of stone benches, so it looked like a concert for thorn bushes. Down at the bottom, sitting on a block of stone in the middle of the stage, the god Apollo hunched over a ukulele, plucking out a mournful tune. At least, Leo assumed it was Apollo. The dude looked about 17, with curly blonde hair and a perfect tan. He wore tattered jeans, a black t-shirt, and a white linen jacket with glittering rhinestone lapels, like he was trying for an Elvis, Ramones, Beach Boys hybrid look. Leo didn't usually think of the ukulele as a sad instrument. Pathetic, sure, but not sad. Yet the tune Apollo strummed was so melancholy, it broke Leo's feels. Sitting in the front row was a young girl of about 13, wearing black leggings and a silver tunic, her dark hair pulled back in a ponytail. She was whittling on a long piece of wood, making a bow.
"Those are the gods?"
Frank asked.
"They don't look like twins."
"Well, think about it," Hazel said. "If you're a god, you can look like whatever you want. If you had a twin..."
"I'd choose to look like anything but my sibling," Frank agreed. "So what's the plan?"
"Don't shoot!"
yelled Leo. It seemed like a good opening line, facing two archery gods. He raised his arms and headed down to the stage. Neither god looked surprised to see them. Apollo sighed and went back to playing his ukulele. When they got to the front row, Artemis muttered,
"There you are." we were beginning to wonder. That took the pressure out of Leo's pistons.